G'day and welcome to Horse Sense, a show for the thinking horse person. At Horse Sense, we give you practical, relevant, up-to-date and even inspirational information that's going to enrich your horsing life. If you're a first-time listener, a big welcome to you, and if you're returning, thanks so much, an even bigger welcome back. This show is brought to you by the Equine Care Clinic, a clinic dedicated to the care of sick or injured horses when their owners can't. Check out the site at equinecareclinic.com. I'm your host, Amanda Edwards, and today's guest is Catherine Louise Birmingham. Catherine's an accomplished and successful dressage rider, an instructor, and an author. She has lived and trained horses in Australia, Japan, and Germany. In her books, Ride for Life and Just Be You, she explores the links between our thinking and being and our riding and looks at how this can be applied to our daily lives. Catherine's developed her coaching style into now what she has termed enlightened riding, where spirituality meets dressage, and she now speaks and teaches on this all over the world. Catherine's an incredibly interesting and wonderful person, and I really loved this interview. Be prepared, folks. This one goes deep. Enjoy. Hello, Catherine, and welcome to Horse Sense. How are you today?
I'm fantastic, Amanda. Thank you very, very much for having me here.
It's an absolute pleasure, and I'm really excited to be talking to you about enlightened riding and all the work that you've done. I've been reading lots about you, and I've read Just Be You. So I'm really keen now to have a conversation with you and share all of your thoughts and experiences with the listeners. So we'll start with the obvious question. Tell the audience a little bit about who you are and your journey.
I mean, that's the elusive question, who am I? but in physical terms, I'm somebody who grew up passionately loving horses. And I did not come from a horse family. So the passion to be with horses and the passion to actually work with them was the thing that drove me through everything. My mother was volunteering with the RDA, with the Riding for the Disabled, and she gave me an opportunity when I was in primary school to come and help her. And because I was helping her on days off and on school holidays and so forth, they let me ride their ponies. So I used to go there after school, after I did my paper round, and ride Tonto, bareback, nothing. I didn't own a saddle or anything. Only when the school was open could I use their equipment. But otherwise, I taught myself to ride by myself as a nine-year-old kid with this fantastic pony, Tonto. He's just good memory.
I had a Tonto. There was a lot of horses back those days called Tonto.
See, it must be our we're reliving our lives from when we were American Indians and those horses came back with us too for this one.
Exactly.
So it was a push from a passion. I've always had the passion for horses, and strangely, I always knew what I wanted to do. I used to argue with teachers at school. I used to say, I know where I need to be. I know I need to be training horses. And it was always, I started it because I knew it was what I was supposed to be doing.
So you then went on as you grew up and worked with some, and you've become quite an accomplished and successful dressage rider at the highest level.
Well, I don't see myself that way, but no, dressage was the passion. It was, I worked hard, but.
And what do you love about dressage?
For me, it was the main thing about dressage is that the way I learned and the way I was seeing it is that you had to master yourself. You couldn't force things to happen. You had to be good at it. And when I say be good at it, I mean that you had to learn. You had to challenge yourself. You had to grow. It was one of the highest and most kind of sensitive forms of communication with the horses that I found. Now I understand there's many, many different forms of sensitive communication, but dressage was definitely very, very a very disciplined sport, used to be. but so it was the passion and the drive for wanting to be able to have a relationship and wanting to understand and communicate with the horses on the physical level at that time.
Yep, yep. Because there's something about a horse, isn't it, that just gets in your blood and your spirit, and you're kind of hooked for life, as we all say. And non-equestrians have trouble working that out. And I feel like they're missing out.
Yeah, very true. But I do also believe that each individual soul has a passion or something that they love in order to help them with that lifetime. So if non-equestrians are not loving the horses, I think it's because they don't need the horses in their life. Maybe their passion lies somewhere else. And I don't know, I'm speaking for myself here, but you might be able to agree. I think the passion for horses also leaves no area in our lives for passion for anything else. So the horses
there
become all consuming
that.
For us.
Yes, I think that becomes quite true too. Yeah, there's not a lot of space left for anything else.
But, exactly.
You then went and worked with Andrew McLean, who fabulous place, the AEBC, the Australian Equine Behaviour Centre, and certainly one of the places I learnt a lot after coming back to riding. And my daughter, as I said to you in the emails, went to the pony camps with you as her instructor many, many times. And it was just a brilliant thing for her to gain confidence. So tell us about that time.
Okay. For me, with Andrew McLean, I was already working at a small stables in Piercedale. And there was two horses there that he was sending up. The owners, the people that I worked for, were sending up horses to go and work, to go and get trained by Andrew and at the ABC. And one of them was he was a rearer. He kept rearing all the time. And at that time, I couldn't understand, because of my logical thinking, I couldn't understand that if there was a place that could fix these horses with these problems, why weren't all the horses there? So I had already the opportunity to leave and go to Germany, but for it was nearly 8 months. It was longer than 6 months that I had between moving out of Australia and going to Germany. I wanted to go and learn from Andrew. So I had already gone up there and been there for 2 weeks with the two horses. And when we came back and I had left that job, I went up to Andrew and Manuela and I just said, you don't need to pay me. Just please give me somewhere to live. Give me food. I want to learn. And I was passionately there with them I lived in their house, so I was just to babysit their children. They were a beautiful family, really, really beautiful family. It was learning. I was very fortunate because at that time that I was there, Andrew was still doing his studies. So he even took me up to Marcus Alden College, where they were performing one of the feed studies on a group of horses. I was very, very lucky that I was at a time where Andrew was still there all the time and I could take his ear. I used to go on the trips with him everywhere and really ask him millions of questions. But it was at that time of learning the horse psychology part, the psychology of the horses, it was just fascinating, really, really fascinating. I learned a lot from him and Manuela and the whole place, all of them, Kate and Rob and Warwick, all of them, they were just really, really a wonderful, wonderful team.
It was a great team, and I haven't been there for a while. They still are a great team. But, yeah, I really used to enjoy Manu, her lessons, and she's a very gifted instructor, so with a great feel for the horse. They're great with children too, like the way that they develop up children. It's just really lovely. But anyway, so you then moved on to Germany. And how did that come about?
At the place I was working at before I went to Andrew's was a lovely German lady there that I became friends with. And she offered me, at the time I had no intentions or goals or even thoughts of moving to Germany, but she asked me if I wanted to ever go. Her family had a farm there and she could get me work there and at the beginning, but I would have to move on and find something else. It turns out that she was... Alexandra Klatter, the daughter of Hinnet Klatter. So, yeah, just the universe always puts us with the right people now. But I did move there, and I loved it, and Hinnet and everybody was in. So I ended up actually staying at Klatter for over 8 months. Originally, after a month there, I was trying to actually find somewhere else to go because I thought I needed to leave. But no, I ended up staying there 8 months, and I broke in all the young stallions, and wow, I just got hit. Like, that place, it gave me a crash course on German stud farms, a crash course on the German language. I learnt it within 6 months. It was definitely the whole 4.5 years that I was in Germany was, I still always say, this was the hardest time of my life physically and emotionally. It was very stressful. It was extremely, you had to give 200% the whole time. The time that I was there, it was still at a time where the training and the horses were extremely respected. Good riders were in every single stable. There was no ego, so everybody was good. So it was basically, you've got to stay good, otherwise somebody else is ready to just fill your spot.
Highly competitive. And tell me, explain to people, to the listeners, what is the, you know, we hear a lot about the German way of horsemanship and riding, and tell me what are some of the key differences, say, that you really were really a surprise to you between Australian and German approach to horses?
I wrote a whole book on it. That's basically Ride for Life, is that the main difference was there, I have to also speak for both sides, because it's not fair to say that one country is doing everything wonderful. And they have, for Kalfsfährt, of selling horses, then everything is rushed, everything is forced, everything is draw reins, and it can be horrible. But then there is the flip side of where they had that very traditional classical training for show jumpers as well as dressage horses. It was not just dressage horses. And it was a philosophy of self-mastery. It was literally mastery. It was focus, this amazing ability to focus, have non-judgment upon the horse, to work upon a task, and to not, I mean, the horse could absolutely completely flip out and the rider would stay calm, stay focused, ride through it. And they're not seeing it as a bad horse. It was part of its transition and its training. It was, for them, especially a dressage horse, the more sensitive it was, the better it performed. So there was an acceptance and a love and an appreciation for this difficult horse that we never had in Australia. I mean, in Australia, they were extremely quiet. They never shied at hardly anything. They were, and when I went there, the horses that I thought were bad at Andrew McLean's were normal horses in Germany. these were normal horses. So I think the first day I was there, they put me on a three-year-old that had just been broken in and sent me outside. This horse shied at a puddle. I fell off straight away. All it did was shy, but I was on the ground straight away. And it taught you, Germany taught you how to ride physically, but it taught you how to focus. And I think that's why that stage of things was very helpful for me, for mentally to focus. But as I'll explain later down the track, I also realized it shut off emotion, and that is another path I'll probably get to explain later.
Yeah, okay. And lastly, you went to Japan.
Oh, Japan. I love Japan. Love the food. Love the people. Japan was very similar to Germany. It was I think that's why I loved it so much, was there was this tradition, respect, honor. There was, it was little ego involved. It was all about actions speak louder than words. I really, really enjoyed Japan. I was very lucky because I was the only foreigner in that area. And I was the only foreigner that was actually allowed in to actually stay in Japan at that time. There was one other German guy who was a show jumper at another stables in Tokyo, but he was the only one. So for the Japanese to actually allow a foreigner to come in, I was very, very lucky. I was meant to go there for 3 months. I ended up staying a year and 3 months. I enjoyed Japan very much, but I had to leave two reasons. My father was sick with cancer, and I really knew I did not want to stay and live in Japan. So it was a transition. It was the next stage. But Japan, wow, they had the best of the best horses. Oh gosh, all of the best Grand Prix horses that were sold out of Europe at the time were sold to Japan. So
Wow. So it was that, and was that to so that Japan could raise its profile in the dressage area, or what was the, you know?
Japan was okay for the Japanese. The riding was a very high social class thing. Only the rich of the rich would ride, or have horses. So they weren't very competitive with the rest of the world. They were competitive within Japan. So they had their own rules for the competitions. I mean, things that you weren't allowed to do in Germany, you could do very easily in Japan. I mean, I was warming up horses. I was warming up a Grand Prix horse for one lady. I won't say names because they're all lovely people. I was warming up one Grand Prix horse. I warmed the whole thing. I had to go through all the movements of the test for her so she could see that the horse could do everything. She literally got on the horse, went around the arena, said hello to the judge, and went in and did her test. And that was it. So, no, look, I mean, and then there was the other riders that were working just as hard as everybody else that wanted to train their horses. So for them, the horses that came from Germany were beautifully trained and could handle some of the bad riding, which is in any country. We all sometimes have bad riders. It's or riders that are not yet balanced or skilled enough yet. So the German horses were the best ones. They were the ones that were really, really, really well schooled, that they were physically and mentally strong enough to cope with the changes that they had to have in their life.
I find that an incredible experience. I've never really been into other countries extensively like that. And yours are quite different countries, like from Europe to Japan and Australia. They're very, you would think they are very, very different. But it sounds like the horse experience in each of those countries has strong similarities and a passion that goes across all of it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's and that's what I always find so interesting. We think other countries are very, very different and other people are very, very different, but in fact, we all have the same fears and passions and love.
You're going down a very, very good track, but this conversation could go on for a very long time. No,
Yes.
you're very, very, that's a very wise awareness there, Amanda, in that I feel that's why I'm always saying I believe horses are helping us in the group of people that are horses are around. We also have the heightened ego in that group of people, but we also have that heightened opportunity of connectivity, awareness, and the ability to realize that we can move beyond our ego and see that we are all one. So it is a powerful thing. The horse, as with other animals in different industries, the horses are helping us evolve, I believe.
Yeah, I am of the same sort of view. Which brings us to your writing, and your first book, Ride for Life. Tell us how you came to become and to publish your first book.
It's funny how life always, well, maybe our soul, our higher self is setting up things for us without us realizing, puts us in situations that at the time we might think are bad, but they're actually preparing or helping us achieve something that we will use later. I went to Australia because my father was had cancer. He eventually did pass away. But I wanted to spend some time with him. Otherwise, after Japan, my goals were originally to go back to Germany. But I didn't. I came to Australia, and because his cancer held out for another 2 more years, I actually stayed in Australia and started a training stable, started my own business there. And it was during the year, it was the year 2007, it was the year 2000, the winter of 2007, I had this property and officer. It was winter and I had hardly any clients and there was nothing going on, and this is the time where you usually think, okay, my business is going to die. There's nothing's going to happen. And everybody had been saying for a very long time, write a book, write a book, write a book. And I thought, okay, so I did it. I just sat down and for 2 weeks, I literally wrote Ride for Life. And I had Nina. Nina was working for me at the time. She was wonderful. She was reading it every time I would write something. She would read it and give feedback. She helped me through that whole writing of that. But the entire book of Ride for Life, I wrote down in 2 weeks. It was originally three times the length. it got edited.
The joy of editing. But you know, I know. The thing about that is, I'm going to pick up on that point because I wrote First Response and I wrote that in 30 days. And the thing about what you're saying is it's just about just get the words down on paper. Don't not to hold yourself back by proper English or proper writing or anything. Just get it down and it's out there and then you edit it.
Exactly. Because I feel when we're writing, Amanda, as you would probably know yourself, our soul is speaking. And so when you mentally try to constrict that or mentally try to edit it before you write it, you're editing the message of your soul. And yeah, I completely agree with you there, but the writing is always free flow and I always handwrite first. Everything is always written down.
Oh, do you?
Handwritten first, then I computerize it, then I type it and add a lot more as typing. Yeah.
So in that book you talk about your experiences. I've only read little bits of that one. So tell me a bit, what's that book about?
All right, Ride for Life is basically everybody was asking me the same question you asked before, why can the Germans ride so well? And Ride for Life was those principles of why they were riding well. But with an additional, as I said, there was an emotional aspect missing from this, and I added my 2 cents worth along into that. But it was because I had gone through a health problem in Germany and I had ruptured 2 discs. I had a 3rd disc ruptured. I had the surgeons in Germany telling me I'd never ride again. They were all telling me that I had to quit. And, of course, me, Catherine, no, I'm as stubborn as an ox. And there was no way I was going to quit. And Ride for Life was also the message of the principles behind what got me through that time. So it was that philosophy of why they can ride well, but also it's the same philosophy of how we live life. So Ride for Life was literally basically bringing to the surface the philosophies of riding, but connecting them to that your horse is a symbolism for life. So how you're approaching your horse is exactly the same way as you learn and grow and you approach your life. So that's what Ride for Life was about. Ride for Life was the more of the mental aspect of going through difficulty and struggle in life and how to move beyond it from that aspect.
I'm picking up too on this point, which brings you probably to your enlightened riding, where dressage meets spirituality. So that kind of brings in, you've really now by this stage developed your own approach to riding and also been over to what I really loved about the way that what you wrote and the way that you work is that it seems to be that you are now using the riding and horsemanship analogy and applying it to your life because of that mirroring that horses do.
Exactly. It's funny because all the passion that I used to have about wanting to communicate and learn and be at one with the horses, it shifted over the years. It's changed, and now I have that same passion that I want to work with people. And I feel the horses gave me that tool, the tool of the communication. So it was funny how originally the people gave me the tool of communication with the horses, and now the horses are giving me the tool of communication for the people. And I feel it's
a nice irony or flip.
Oh, yes. Yes. It's this mirror of ourself, something that we, because we're so sometimes so very trapped behind this illusion of life that we have. This is where it becomes very Buddhist, but it is very much this illusion that we have of life and we have of ourselves. I always say it's like learning to uncover yourself, that you are no longer a chess piece, but then you start to discover that you are the chess player. So it's this form of opening up your own awareness of yourself. And in turn, you see, it's an awareness of your whole life. And that's what I feel the horse is giving us. The horse is giving us that gift of being able to see ourselves. And that's in any industry, you could be a hobby rider riding out on the beach. You could be a professional Grand Prix dressage rider. You could be an Olympic rider. You could be a breeder. It does not matter. And now equine-assisted therapy, it's booming. It's wonderful. There are so many avenues of where people have the opportunity that have horses in their lives. Mothers, you were connected with this, the mothers of the children at the pony club. Do you know how much knowledge they have because they're observing and they're around the horses and they can see something from a completely different perspective to the riders? So it's a joint thing. I always say you don't even need to be riding the horses. I believe anybody that's around the horses is picking up on that energy, is picking up on that shift in consciousness, that change of view, that change of awareness. And it is very much the first principle of it is that mirror theory.
Yeah, it's really quite a powerful when you can translate. One of my instructors once said, he said, you're the only person that's actually taken what you're learning with the horses and applied it to leadership and life. And it's really interesting to watch, because what I was doing was like, oh, that's interesting. I work with teams of people. And so what I'd see is that I was sometimes quite tough and quite abrupt on my horse, and he would respond in kind and be quite abrupt with me. And it was that to and fro. And I was like, you know, I wonder if I'm doing that to my team. And I'd ask them and they'd say, kind of, sometimes, yeah.
Oh, it's beautiful that you could be so honest. Wow.
It's taken a while, you know.
I know.
But when you can apply that, it makes a huge difference in your life, but a massive difference to your riding too. So yes. How do you think that's changed you as a rider?
More forgiving, more patient. As a rider, definitely. For me, it was the self-punishment, the self-judgment. I think the biggest thing would have to be the letting go of judgment. Judging the horse, judging myself, fear of what everybody else was thinking. And it has to happen. It's got to be right. It's the ego. It was the biggest shift, I think, was learning how to overcome my ego, not just in my life, but then with the horses. And I got tested on that recently. I had to go to Germany to do a seminar there. This was a huge challenge for me because it was speaking about enlightened riding. I did the enlightened riding seminar there. And that was, for me, I thought that the last place in the world that anybody would want to hear the spiritual side of riding. But it was fantastic. It went very well. I got very good feedback from people. But at the same time, Wolfgang asked me to ride his horse. Now, I didn't know he doesn't let anybody ride his horse except his two daughters. They are the only ones that are allowed to ride this horse. So I had to really practice all of my own focus. Don't get lost in the thinking about what are people going to think of you and all of this. And he ended up riding it the whole week I was there. So it was
wow,
and then giving him feedback. He was giving me feedback. I was giving him feedback and his daughter. So it was this, I truly believe the major thing that has helped me was letting go of ego, letting go of judgment. And I think I will always have to work on that my whole life. But that's been the biggest change, is not judging myself and not judging the horses.
And so how does the horse perform now for you, or with you, actually, is more to the point?
Well, with me, as with people, I tend to find my energy, for some reason, it brings everything out in people. So if they've got fear there, it's going to come out. If they've got anger there, it's going to come out. If they've got sadness or emotion there, it's going to come out. And I've been noticing that with the horses too. So any horses that got any frustration or anything that's there, it will come out. It will come out when I'm there, usually within the first ride, and then it will ease, and I'll deal with it and work with it afterwards. But I'm tending to find that whatever is lying dormant I will bring it to the surface and then deal with it, and we move on and we work. And it's I'm noticing it not just with the horses, but it's definitely with the people, especially during a clinic, but yeah, always teaching, but definitely when I'm riding the horses. And it works the opposite way as well. A horse that might be struggling with a rider, I might get on and they might feel really at ease and really safe and really happy, and we have a super ride. But very often a horse that looks like everything's going fine with the rider, I'll get on and it will explode. And
it's been very contained.
yes. And the thing is, I'm seeing it now. Lately I've been actually seeing that containment, not behaviorally, but I just see it. And I'll ask somebody to do a medium canter. I'm thinking that horse is going to explode, but with that rider, it will stay. It will stay calm. It will just keep going, and I get on, and yeah, it explodes. but yes, I think.
So it's a really different space.
Definitely, because I think also now that you've asked this question, that's quite a you've asked me a question that I've had to now search for an answer. I think now that I realize too that non-judgment on their behavior, they must be feeling free to be themselves.
It's what, when you said that, I was wondering, you're actually deliberately, working in this way with people and horses, what you're creating is an energy of space that says it's safe to be you.
Exactly, yeah.
And yes. So maybe that's what's happening here, is that it's safe to be you. It's not going to be, I'm not judging me, I'm not judging you. And so stuff will come up.
Yeah, that's
great. Because we're,
I love that. Amanda, safe feel, to be with you. Wow, that's beautiful. Wow, that's beautifully said.
Well, that's what I'm hearing when you speak it. So I think that's where it's coming from. Because I know that if you work with people and you provide them without judgment, their barriers come down.
Yes.
So the minute you don't judge them and you care for them and you have good energy for them, there's a sense that it's okay to just spit it all out. And maybe the horses are doing the same thing.
Yes, you're spot on. Wow, you dug deep on that one, Amanda. Very good.
I did. Where did that come from?
I still can't believe you've read Just Be You. I think there's like about six people that have read that book. I don't actually know. I put it up. See, that hasn't properly been edited. That's been basically, that's straight from my soul, because that hasn't had a professional edit. That's had a friend of mine look over it. But that book, I just wanted to make it available to people, because I don't have the company anymore that I had in Australia. But I lost all of that. That's all gone. So Just Be You, wow, that's if you've actually taken the dive to read that whole thing, that's...
I read the whole thing, and it was very, I felt like I'd been in your head, your soul.
Yeah. So you were, literally, you were, because that book's not edited. That's...
There you go. It's the first chuck out of information. Yeah. It's got so many concepts in there. I was like, really? And yes, there's pieces where you go, okay, where's this going? But that'll all come out in the editing. But I really, there was things there I was like, yeah, that's true. Yeah, that resonates for me. So a really interesting space. And going back to the judgment thing,
yes,
one of the things I'm sure that, and you sort of touched on it in your book, people are very, we're very unkind to ourselves in our heads. We attribute a lot of meaning to our riding. So, you know, I'll hear riders say, oh, that horse, he's just a bastard, you know.
Yeah, oh,
or
yes.
He's got this characteristic, and it means that he doesn't like me. He just hates it when I come near him, or all this sort of stuff. And often I think I had a particular person I rode with quite often, and some days her and her horse would have an awesome day out, and other days she would be just not feeling great, in a real low, and the horse would be in a really bad space with her and dangerous, you know. And in fact, when she'd say, the things that came out of her mouth then were, I'm just a crap rider, I'm really bad at this, see, I'm not even a horseman, I should give it all up, and blah, 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 blah. All this stuff that she would never have said to me.
See, it's exactly like you've said, in that mirror, in that feeling safe and environment, you can bring it out. The horse is helping her see her true thoughts that she's having about herself. And awareness
Yeah.
creates change. So the moment she's able to bring that to the surface, the moment she's able to consciously see it, not even necessarily change anything of it yet, it will already start, the light will come into that area of herself, and it will already start to change her thinking because she's aware of it.
It is if you recognize that that's not truth. For her, she
Yes.
believed those statements. And so it was like saying, really? Do you really think he just hates you? I don't think horses do hate, you know. They
I
just,
think there's some
I'm
people
not
that they
sure that
might
they
know.
go with that whole concept.
That's our ego. Our ego
Yeah.
will try to hold us in fear or doubt about ourselves. So, I mean, the ego is part of us. It's part of our human experience. We need it, we use it, but it's whether it uses us or whether we use it. And belief patterns are developed over through experiences of life. And we can only change those belief patterns by new experiences. So the moment she's able to bring that to the surface, and then her horse can start giving her new experiences, all those times that she goes out and things do go well, that belief will start changing. But getting to the root of why you have that belief in the first place, when that arises, when that comes to the surface, I still believe, because it happens to me all the time, it lets go of the hold on its own.
Yeah, I think you're true. It's like exposing it is takes away its power.
Yes.
So
I just had the
it's
belief yesterday about something that has been constantly reappearing in my life. And I had a reading with a wonderful, really wonderful guy. In that sometimes that we can be fed information or told things, but if we're not ready to hear it, not ready to see it, the actual connections to it don't come out until later. But when they do, you get that, and now I understand that it's a relief. It's actually like a release, and that energy then leaves you. So even though she might be told that that belief's false, it's not truly true, he doesn't really hate you, later she'll have another experience that will connect to that belief, and it will shift on its own.
So, if for riders out there, how can they start to practice enlightened dressage?
The first most important thing is be honest with yourself. Be honest with who you are when you're riding. That means that if you're angry, be angry. Accept that you're angry. It always leads back to this letting go of judgment, because judgment is the core gut of our ego. So once you're able to ride without judgment, or be accepting of your judgments, witness them, listen to them, don't let them rule you. Enlightened riding is simply about taking where you are at and shining light on it. And that means no matter where you are at, that's you could be bad balance, big deal. You could have a strong hands, big deal. It's simply bringing who you are to the light. That's all it is. But that does
Very
go much deeper.
simplified.
Very
Yeah.
simplified, yeah.
It sounds so easy, so we're just gonna
Yeah, yes, just go and ride. No, I'm
yeah, just go do
joking.
that. So what would be the one key message? Would it be that about the judgment, or have you got a key message you'd like to leave listeners with?
My key message is again, accept who you are. You are who you are for a reason. And that means that any beliefs, any pains, any sadnesses, any angers, anything that you have for a reason, and it's your job to listen to them. It's your job to listen to yourself the same way as you would care for a young child. Listen to who you are. I would basically, the key message is let go of that blaming the horse, let go of the blaming the world around. Ask yourself why you have what you have, why you have the problem with your horse, why you have the problem with your life. Ask yourself why. And that
Yeah,
means that you're not to blame
powerful.
either. It's there for a reason. Life is trying to help you grow. Life is trying to help you heal from this life, from past lives, from, and it's important that you listen.
That's very powerful, I think. And if people can take that on, I think it will be almost, riding changing, but life changing as well. So you've now taken a year out to spend time in Bali writing.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Well, I'm writing. I had the idea of two more books, but, well, there's another book, The Wisdom of Writing. It's basically everything I've been talking about, and a lot of the articles I've already written, it's extensively going more on that. But I have another thing that's very, very passionate about is humanitarian work and empowerment and how we can help heal and change this world, and that begins individually, of course. So my next move is actually moving to Italy. I was just there last year in October to give a talk to a prison while I was in Germany doing the seminar there, and I made some wonderful contacts, and it's really pushing me into the next direction. So it will always, I'll still always be working with horses. It's my passion. It's my tool and my key to help people. But Europe will be next. I'm in Australia anyway in April. I'm doing a clinic there.
Oh, fantastic.
Yes.
I'd love to touch base with you then.
Yes,
it would be really lovely.
Yes. I'd love that too.
And are you coming over for a clinic or?
Yes. I'm always there for some of the people that I used to coach when I had the training stables in Officer. They still coach with me to this day, and they won't ride with anybody else. So I owe it to them to keep going back there. No, they're a beautiful group of people, really beautiful.
Oh,
group
how
of people.
Wonderful. And you know, that's a testament to who you are as an instructor, though, that they're like, no, can't be doing it with anyone else. You have to come back. Sorry.
Yeah, I feel the same way about them. I really, they're a remarkable group of people. So as much as I can get to them, I will always do it. So I'm at Mindy Stables in Tayab, and it's the same. It's not just riding. I often work with people with their problems that are happening, but they come with their horse. And, yes, so I'm always there, and it's always open to people. Anybody can come, and anybody can come and visit. Anybody can come and talk, and I'm always open to go and give talks to anywhere else. Yes,
brilliant.
If I could do everything, I would, but I can't.
So, you know, the world is really your home, isn't it?
I believe the world is everybody's home. I believe that we are citizens of this world, that we are all brothers and sisters, and that we don't own any piece of land. I mean, I know physically we tend to do that, but I believe spiritually we need to have that shift of a connection with the world and each other and the animals and plants around us. So for me, yeah, I'm just trying to live it. Yeah.
Awesome. So you have two books out there that are available on Kindle and hard copy, which you
yes.
can get on Amazon or via your website. Is that right?
That's correct. Just for you, the hard copy one, sorry, Ride for Life, the hard copy one that can be bought through an actual place in Australia, but it's
okay.
sold worldwide. It's actually just been translated into Italian. So Ride for Life is now available in Italian. It was available in Danish, but I don't know whether they're sold out or I don't know what's happening there. But Just for You, as you've experienced, is I self-published it myself onto Amazon as a Kindle
mm-hmm.
book.
Yep.
It just to make it available for people. It is very raw. It is very in original state. It is very basically typed up from my handwritten notes. but I believe strongly in its message. And
yeah, no, I liked it. I thought it had a lovely sort of, I didn't mind the journey of it.
Oh, good. Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah.
Wow, I can't believe it. Thank you so much for reading it.
No, that's my pleasure. So I would like then to finish our interview by saying thank you. I have really enjoyed this conversation so much. I've really loved it because it really, all of these sorts of themes do resonate with me quite strongly. So, and hopefully we will catch up with you in April.
Oh, you're welcome, Amanda. Thank you so very, very much for doing this and all the people you're helping and everything you do with these talks that you do with people and your book yourself and your work that you're doing. It's remarkable. So thank you for
thank
everything
you.
You're doing.
Oh, that's very
really
kind.
Helpful. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks very much, Catherine, and goodbye.
Bye.
I just love how Catherine intertwines the lessons from horse training and riding and applies them to life. Her philosophical approach intrinsically feels good. I think that different people are going to get different learnings from this interview based on their current view of the world, but here's my three for what they're worth. Number one, notice the voices in your head, speak them out, and acknowledge your feelings. Number two, disconnect the judgment from yourself, your horse, and your riding. It's not good or bad, it just is, and sometimes we can be incredibly tough on ourselves and our horses. Number three, if something keeps coming up over and over, just see if there's a connection. What's the theme? What's the lesson? What do you need to own up to or acknowledge that'll make it disappear? I'd love to hear what you thought. You can leave comments on the show notes at www.horsesenseshow.com, or even better, subscribe on iTunes and leave a review. I love a good review, and even a mediocre one, but I really love good ones. I'll be reading them out on the show and answering any questions listeners might have. We'll be back next Tuesday. Until then, may your horsing be good horsing, and goodbye.